Major Flint, Reel 2. Major Flint, you mentioned about your interview.
Mm.
Were you asked for any mechanical skill? Was that asked of you?
No, not that I remember. I don't think we even asked if we could drive. I don't remember that. I know we were asked more about... We were mostly straight from school, only a couple of years out of school. And we were asked if we'd got matriculation or that sort of thing, and more educational standards, and whether we played, you know, what rugby clubs we played for, and that sort of thing, rather than any particular aptitude as far as mechanical stuff was concerned. I don't remember any specific question of that nature.
What would you say would be the kind of general standard of entry along with you?
Well, I suppose they were clerks out of banks, bank clerks, insurance offices, stockbrokers we had. That was a sort of general line. People that worked in the city, and there was no sort of specific occupation that people were drawn from. We weren't allowed to wear glasses. Anybody with weak sight, that was the end of it. That automatically debarred you. But there was no specific mechanical requirement. Obviously, they would put that into us, from their own point of view, rather than we were pre-trained beforehand.
Getting on to the training, how many nights a week did you have to train?
I forget the actual statutory minimum. I think it was 30 drills a year, something like that. You got two drills for each night. But it was made very clear right at the beginning that we had to do a lot more than that. Having got our kit and so forth issued, we then went on to a period of square bashing in the drill hall under the RSM, the regular RSM, and until we passed out in our foot drill, we weren't allowed to take part in any other training. And this was two nights a week, Mondays and Thursdays, regularly, for the full period of the 7 till 9 o'clock. We were taught tank corps drill, as opposed to ordinary infantry drill or anything like that. The tank corps had its own special drill. Somewhere in my collection, I've still got a drill book somewhere. You probably heard of the red books the army had. They were red covered books. Well, the tank corps had brown covered books, and there was one on foot drill and so on. You probably get one out of the War Office library. They've probably got one there still. I don't know where mine is at the moment. However, we did this foot drill, the usual recruit business, standing to attention, saluting with a cane. That was something that you don't see nowadays. We had to buy our canes, regimental canes, cost $0.50. I think they made us pay for them, because otherwise I think they would have got lost rather easily. So if you paid $0.50, you looked after it. All the turns, you know, right turn, left turn, slow march, quick march, changing from one to the other, saluting on the march. That was the ordinary. So we used to march very slowly. So did the tank corps, for that matter. I think this was somewhat due to the influence they had guards, RSMs, put into the tank corps towards the end of the 1418 war. And there was this very ponderous step that you were trained in, as opposed to the somewhat quicker pace of the infantry. That was all right for ceremonial parades, but when you got onto tanks, you had to double everywhere. There was no question of sort of walking about, and doubling was the normal thing.
You mentioned there that the tank corps had a drill that was separate to the...
Yes, they did crew drill, and when you were working with tanks, the crew, about four or five people, dependent upon the type of tank. It could have even been two or three people in a light tank. But it used to form up in front of your tanks. and then to march them off from the tanks, the order was crews right, quick march, and they sort of wheeled round on the right. The crew commander was on the right-hand side, and then sort of marched off in sort of columns of fours. And to come back again into line, there was two of the Hulk crews left, and sort of one, two, three, four, bash, bash, and you were back in two lines again. But this crew drill was based on the manoeuvre side of the tanks, or the manoeuvre aspect of the tanks, because we used to do section drill, as it was called, and you probably heard talking about making attacks two up, three up, four up, that sort of thing. Well, we used to do exactly the same thing in foot drill. And the crews would be one behind the other, say four crews. And then, I forget the actual order, but it was something like form two up. And the second crew did a left incline and so many paces to the left, and then a right incline, while the first crew was marking time. As soon as they came into line with each other, then they advanced, and the other two behind them did the same thing. It was all done on the sort of on the barrack square or in the drill yard, with the idea of giving people a basic idea of the manoeuvres in actual practice. It was a very this was a good idea in a way, but when they formed the Royal Armoured Corps, when the Royal Tank Corps became a Royal Tank Regiment, they went on to a general sort of drill, and apart from forming up in front of the tanks, all this crew drills and so forth, it faded out, or section drill it was called. We also taught revolver drill, incidentally. We had the Mark 6 4.5 Webley, which were issued on sort of special occasions, but we had to do the ceremonial drill with a revolver, including, if you please, rest on your arms, reverse to a funeral drill on a pistol. That has to be seen to be believed, I assure you. And the only time we ever had any chance of using it was on KG-5's funeral. And the regiment lined the route round Marble Arch, and the crowd broke through there. I had a magnificent view of the back view of a police horse's arse. And any suggestion about, you know, rest on your arms reversed was way out, you know, not a hope. But here we are.
What was this cane thing you mentioned earlier?
Oh, a regimental cane. It was a Malacca cane, about 2 foot 6 long, with a round ball on the end. Every private soldier had one in the regular army, in infantry or not. It was a swagger cane, they used to call it. Vulgarly stated to stop the little dogs from piddling on your legs, but... We wore putties, by the way. That's the thing you don't see nowadays, but all the troops had putties. Most awkward things to put on until you learned how to put them on, a dreadful thing.
Were you issued with on your kit, were you issued with dungarees of some kind? For getting
yes, yeah. The khaki uniform was only worn when you were out of tanks. And if it was any question of going into tanks or doing any training, we wore a one-piece overall, a brown overall, and it buttoned up from the crutch right up to the neck. And if necessary, you wore your web equipment on the top of it, but by and large, you just wore the dungarees as they were. And it was so hot in the tanks, certainly, and not so much in the armoured cars, but it was so hot inside that normally you just wore your underclothing underneath your overalls. You didn't even wear a pair of trousers. In the winter, you wore your trousers, but you didn't wear a tunic. It was much too hot.
You mentioned that you were drilled by a regular sergeant major. He was from the tank corps.
Oh, yes. There was a permanent staff. Each territorial army had a permanent staff. Each territorial army unit had a permanent staff. There was a regular adjutant, captain and adjutant, a regular RSM, and a number of... sergeant instructors, usually with the rank of sergeant or the rank of staff sergeant, and they were qualified in D&M, gunnery and so forth, and they were responsible for training the unit. The unit had a lot of TA instructors as well. I mean, in time we became instructors. I don't say we were up to the same standard as the Royal Tank Corps permanent staff people, but a great deal of the training was done by the TA instructors as opposed to the regular army people.
What was your opinion of these RTC people that you've now met?
Oh, first class. They were, of course, the ones I saw were people who'd been recruited sort of since the First World War, although there were a number of people who still had First World War medals, and there was a Cambrai veterans and so forth still in the tank corps when I knew it. There was an active service in India, I mean the Indian frontier, the armoured car companies, they used to get shot over there, and by and large the tank corps had the pick, or could call on the pick of the people, because they could offer something. People learned to drive, you could sort of get yourself a job as a lorry driver if need be afterwards, which wasn't so easy in those days. But generally the educational standard and attitude of the Royal Tank Corps soldier was streets ahead of the ordinary infantryman. And they were, you know, they were sharp, intelligent people. You were expected to be, you know, be on your toes and have your wits about you. The sort of thick, stolid, stand on two bloody great plates of meat all day, that wasn't in it at all. And anybody that didn't jump about and, you know, double about here and there would have heard from it very quickly.
Now, was the sergeant major and the officers, the RTC people, were they mechanically well organized?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, they were.
They knew their job.
That was the purpose of them. Well, they were there to train the unit.
How long did this basic drill training take place? How long did that last?
Oh, about 3 months. And the RSM did the drill, you know, drilled us. And we were told we would do a passing out parade and be inspected by the adjutant. And for that particular thing, we had to dress up in our uniform. The full whack. And we were marched about the drill hall doing all the different things, and at the end of it, you know, the adjutant standing and looking on, and we were deemed to have passed off, you know, and then we were available to go into the unit proper, where we started on our gunnery instruction, or receiving gunnery instruction on the Vickers machine gun.
Could you say something about that? How did you get that training?
Yes. The Rolls-Royce Armoured Car, they had the ordinary, I think it was Mark I Vickers. It had a armoured jacket and so forth and a ball mounting in the turret. And you expected to fire it on the move. But for training on the gun itself, we did the elementary stripping and cleaning. What the hell do they call it? Immediate action, clearing the stoppages on the thing. And we used to do this in the drill hall and in the dance hall at Elverton Street. And there'd be various squads spread around the dance hall, about half a dozen, four was about the ideal number, with an ordinary Vickers machine gun on a tripod. And you went through all the different stoppages and so forth and stripped and cleaned it. They were drill purpose guns. And of course, before the shooting, the two weekends, the Packer guns were pulled out, and we had to get them ready for the range work on the for the weekend. And the cannelure packing had to be packed with asbestos string, which you had to roll in rifle oil between your hands and pack this groove in the barrel, which prevented the water from leaking out of the water jacket. And if you did it properly, the barrel was just rested in the gland so that it shot well. But if you did it badly, there was slop in it. And, the gun wouldn't shoot accurately. So there was, this particularly when we got onto the into the machine gun team, the regimental machine gun team, which I managed in due course, this was a thing that had to be, very carefully looked after. I don't say we cheated, but they used to have a couple of chaps up from Woolwich Arsenal, Packer artificers, used to come and prepare the guns before we went into every nut, bolt and washer was checked on and tightened up. And when we finally went into the actual competition, there was certainly nothing wrong with the guns.
Who instructed you at this stage?
Well, They were TA instructors, ordinary TA people, lance corporals and corporals and so on, but they were recognised a certain amount of ability in gunnery instruction. And we used to, we did this for so long, it took months actually, and then you would pass out on the vicar's gun, as they called it, and you had to be able to clear the stoppages and strip it and clean it and answer one or two questions. And once you'd passed out on the vicar's machine gun, then you went on. You were allowed to go on to the driving and maintenance side of it. It was a progressive business, and at the end of it all, when you'd done recruit training, gunnery, driving and driving and maintenance, then you did wireless training. At the end of it all, you then became known as a trained soldier, such as it was.
The weekends that you did away, how many did you do away on the gunnery that you went away?
Well, officially we did two weekends a year. One was on a 30-yards range. So quite often, this was often done at Wormwood Scrubs and just done on a Saturday. But we also used to go away at a weekend, go away on a Saturday morning, shoot on the Saturday afternoon, shoot on the Sunday morning, and come back on the Sunday afternoon. And as I say, that was for 30 yards. It used to take place also at Ash Ranges, and we used to do our field firing, as it was called, with the armoured cars, from the moving armoured cars. That was done at Ash Ranges. It was nothing extraordinary. The car drove forward about 50 to 100 yards, and you had I think it was about 50 rounds in the belt.
This is in Ash Ranges?
At Ash Ranges, yes.
Aldershot.
Yes, yes. And you fired at an ordinary square target at a range of about 500 yards. And you fired at that, and then the car turned left, and you fired broadside, as it was called, over the, you know, the car went from right to left, but the target was fired at as you were passing it, in, rather than going straight toward it head-on. And actually, head-on shooting was more difficult than broadside, because you've got the up-and-down movement of the car going forward, but broadside was much easier, because the turret was more or less in the centre of the car, so any rocking backwards and forwards made it easier, in theory. It used to be done awfully slowly. I mean, you couldn't... any speeding up or so on, very, very difficult to hit the target at all. This caused... exactly comment, but out of our 100 rounds, I suppose if you got 30 or 40 on, that wasn't bad going. But a number of people used to miss the thing altogether. But you were expected, if you did miss it altogether, they gave you another shot, provided you got some on, you know, you qualified. But it wasn't as easy as it appeared.
You were in the car?
Yes. The gunner was in the car, and the car was moving, and there was no power traverse on the turret or anything like that. The turret was on rollers, on it's like a square box on the chassis, and the turret was round and revolved on a ring, and you had to pull the turret round by the sheer strength. And there was the gun itself was in a ball, a sort of ball mounting, and you held the two traversing handles at the back, and you could move the gun round in this ball. And of course, you just got it nicely on the target, and the car would sort of go up a bump or down in a dip, and you were off again. So you were expected to fire in bursts of about five rounds at a time. And if you could keep it on longer, if you could keep it on target for longer, well, obviously you did, but it was usually short bursts of about 5 to 10 rounds at a time, and that was the expected thing. But you might, out of your 10 rounds, you've got a couple on, the rest probably went, you know, just in the general direction, but never hit it. Mark you, a different thing with the dismounted Vickers machine gun on a tripod. We were expected to get the bloody lot on with that.
This was static?
Static, yes. You fired, this was in the Daily Telegraph Cup that we used to go into, and you fired at two sets of plates three in a team. The first man fired at one set of plates and not in bursts of not less than five, and you were expected to knock your set of plates down in the first burst of five. Then you chopped over, the next man came on, there was a little drill for changing over. He fired in another lot of plates and knocked those down. And then the third man put the rest of the shots onto a target. Well, say it took 10 rounds to knock the next two plates, you had 40 rounds to go on the target. We had a maximum of 40, as a maximum, 40 shots. Well, we used to, you know, we expected to get sort of 35 out of the bloody thing, but if you missed the plates, or they didn't fall down, you'd lost a possible five rounds every time you did it. So it's important to be absolutely spot on and accurate. And we were, by and large.
What would you say, I mean, that firing on the move that you were doing, what would you say overall was the standard of the WD's gunnery?
Well, I can't truthfully say that I ever saw the Royal Tank Corps people doing it. I mean, we at that stage of our career, we were not integrated with the Tank Corps proper for range purposes or anything like that. And I would say that, by and large, we weren't far removed from the Royal Tank Corps. It was bloody hard to hit. This was one of the rather stupid things. It was much better to get into a hull down position and shoot stationary than it was to shoot on the move. But there was a great thing made of in the tanks of firing on the move, and there was tank v tank actions and so on. And people were trained to fire not only the machine guns but the bigger armament, 3-pounders they were in those days, fire on the move.
You'd say,
and they did used to hit. It took an awful lot of concentration, but you could do it. With the tanks, I know it was a bit later, but you had a shoulder control gun and a power traverse for traversing it left or right. And providing you keep the power traverse and sort of keep it on for line, you drop the shoulder, and as soon as you got the cross wires of your telescope on, you pooped off and high percentage of hits.
But you'd say that the emphasis of your gunnery training was on the move?
From the armoured car point of view, yes. That was the expected thing.
Who tested you on that? Who would come and say?
Well, the results were shown on the score that you got. As apart from the technicalities of looking after the gun itself.
But weren't you visited by a regular army man to say, well, you'd reach a standard? Or
not really. We did, in the days of when we were an officer producing unit. We were visited by Brigadier Beckwith Smith on one occasion. I think that's probably what you're thinking of. Poor man. And he was the brigadier in charge of all the officer producing units. And he had been in a Vickers machine gun unit at one time. He was a guardsman, and I don't think he had a very good view of the TA. Although he was in charge of all the officer producing units, I think some of the rather sort of alachific attitudes of the rather independent attitudes of the TA didn't go down frightfully well. He came down once when we were firing on ash ranges, and he was stood there and watched the shooting. And of course, for every 100 rounds that were pooped up the range, only probably half a dozen or 15 hit the target. And we were called together and given a sort of rocket by the brigadier, a waste of ammunition and how ridiculous it all was. And if we couldn't do better than that, we might just as well not be there. And the colonel, or Major Barnard, was it Barnard? No, I think it was, I forget. Anyway, the colonel sort of took his courage in both hands.
That's your colonel.
Our colonel, yes, and suggested the brigadier might not have a bash himself. Do you see? He'd been a Vickers machine gunner, he'd stressed the fact that the magnificent scores they used to get when he had anything to do with it. And it so happened that I wasn't a permanent driver on the car. I happened to be driving this car for the range practices when this went on, and permanent staff instructor, regular Royal Tank Corps chap, a chap called Mick Howe, came over to me, and I sort of looked out of a little slot by the side of the car, sitting in the driver's position, he came up and he said, the Brigadier will be the next detail on this car. You'll give him a soft ride, won't you? And sort of bloody great wink through the through this loophole. And I knew exactly what he meant, because I'd also sort of been a recipient for this rollicking that had gone on. And I took it fairly easy on the head-on business, and when we came to the sort of turn left and, you know, moving left to right across the target, there was a... I speeded up a little bit, and there was also a couple of sort of ditches across this, drain gullies or something, and with an ordinary chap on the, you know, on the gun, I would have eased him down into the ditch and pulled him out again. I made bloody certain I hit this ditch with a thump, and the Brigadier got hold of the traversing handles. They shot sort of right out of his hand, I don't know, right out of his hand, but they shot, and the traversing handles cut his face from his chin and the top of his eye, great gash in his face, which didn't please him. But we were rather, what should I say, happy to see that he never got a single shot on the target. He didn't have a lot to say after that about the general stand. Rather stupid, I suppose, when you look back on it. In addition to that, having got out of the car, because he was white with temper, he said, well, I want to go and have a look at your quarters, where you're camped, and see that everything is in order. And this threw us back a bit, because we knew there were only a couple of chaps back in the camp who'd done their practice, and they were in the process of sort of cooking a meal for the evening, and it was a, you know, nothing sort of particularly regimental about it, about half a dozen bell tents, and that was it. And Mick Howe got hold of me and said, Christ's sake, you know, get back to these people and smarten them up a bit. He expects a guard, you know, on the camp to meet him, and he comes in. And we had a Morris 1500 weight, and I got in this Morris 1500 weight and drove like hell down to the place where the camp was, and alerted these chaps. They were lying flat on their back, asleep. They'd done their little bit, and roused them up, sort of flung their equipment on, and just in time to sort of turn out as Beckwith Smith arrived in his staff car. It was the colonel. And I sort of shouted out, guard, turn out, and stood on the right-hand side as guard commander, and